Good morning, Santa Barbara on KCSB 91.9, and in a brand new time slot, or same time slot, different day, it's talk about Santa Barbara's sister city, spring sports, and the upcoming Santa Barbara County Vintners Association Vintners Festival on Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9. KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. My name is Colin Marshall. This is the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent Poodle Radio. Now on a new day, Thursday mornings, which I think is better. I think it better aligns with the distribution of the actual issues of the paper, doesn't it? They come out Thursdays. The show is on Thursdays. The universe is once again in alignment. Plenty to talk about today. First and foremost, that the internet connection here at KCSB seems to have decided to take a brief vacation. So instead of the usual tracks organized by pop culture editor Allie Cumming-Gore, we're hearing a cut from Jim Connolly and the Gove County String Quartet, kind of a mainstay at Culture Fraser's Santa Barbara New Music Series shows at Muddy Waters every second Thursday of the month. And I figure if the internet goes, we'll still have string quartets like Jim Connolly's. So the apocalypse won't be too bad. That's the point. Today we're talking about plenty of things you heard me mention earlier. There's the Vintners Festival. That's going to be the third segment. Second segment, John Zant on sports. And the first segment deals with something you've been hearing about in one sense, quite a bit on the news, I'm sure, in the large scale, but you haven't been hearing about it perhaps in the exact way we're going to be talking about it today. The event is the recent disaster Japan has endured and is working on now rebuilding from. I mean, lots of cities, especially, say, Fukushima, have gotten damaged, but we want to talk today about Santa Barbara's sister city. And if you have any interest in Japan and you're in Santa Barbara, you know about Santa Barbara's sister city, Toba, over in Japan. But, you know, you might not know about it, by the way, so we want to introduce it. Today with me in the studio, I have a representative of the Santa Barbara Toba Sister City Organization, Lark Bateau. Lark, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Colin. It's great to be here.
Now, tell us, for those who just heard of Toba when I mentioned it, what can you say about Toba? What's the city like? Where is it in Japan?
Well, Toba is a small town about a couple hundred miles south of Tokyo, right on the coast, and very much like Santa Barbara, it's a seaside town, and it's dependent on its economy with the fisheries and also on tourism. And I myself have been there a couple of times, and it's an exquisite little place, and they treat you like royalty when you visit. And because they're our sister city, they really are, it's a more personal connection than when we hear about Japan in trouble, our hearts break for it. But when our siblings are in trouble, we really have to rise to the situation and help as much as we can in a very specific way to some very specific people in need. And that's what I'm here to talk about today.
And I've wanted to go to Japan for a long time myself, and now especially Toba, that I've heard more about it after living in Santa Barbara. It sounds like a Japanese Santa Barbara almost. I mean, is that a good way to put it?
You could put it that way, but in Japan is very different from America.
Right.
And so when you're there, you really are immersed in another culture, and in a culture that is incredibly generous, hospitable, and kind. And they're so generous that when there was a few of people from Toba visiting Santa Barbara back during the time when the Painted Cave fire hit Santa Barbara, and they immediately passed the hat and raised $1,000 just right there and then. Mm. And when they got back, they passed the hat some more in the city, and they sent us $16,000. So they're extraordinary people, and we really want to help them in their time of need also. So we have organized a tsunami relief benefit for Toba, and it will be happening on April 28th, which is very soon. And we hope many people can attend and many more people can actually make donations so that we can also raise several thousand dollars to send to them, because they've had an enormous amount of damage done. They had a smaller tsunami that hit them, about a 5-foot tsunami rolled through their land and their sea, and they had 2,000, I believe, the nets and the oysters that they developed there were damaged, and there's thousands of small fishermen families that have been really hit hard, and we want to help as much as we can. They've actually had $24 million in damage in Toba, and so like I said, these are our siblings, and I personally really want to help, and I know others do too, and so we're making this possible by having this event.
Now, for those who don't know or can't place where Toba is from our description on the map of Japan, as I mentioned before, the city we usually hear about in the news, if we mm-hmm. pay casual attention, is Fukushima with their reactor and all that. Mm-hmm. And in relation to, say, where is Toba? I mean, Japan's not a big country, so, you know, any place there is going to have stood a chance of getting damage. But where's Toba, and how does, relative to sort of the tsunamis that it has endured this time around?
Well, I think Tokyo is several hundred miles south of where the tsunami hit, and Toba is several miles south of that.
Okay.
So it did affect the whole east coast of Japan.
And I want to, we mentioned $24 million in damages, and you mentioned that the economy there, you know, depends on certain things that can be easily harmed by something like a tsunami, but what sort of specifics have you heard about the kinds of things, the kind of work that needs to be done there in Toba? What needs to be replaced? What needs to be rebuilt? What needs to be worked on? Maybe it's even assessment at this point. I mean, where are we in that process?
Well, I personally do not know a lot of the details about what specifically needs to be repaired, but I am assuming from what I've heard that it has to do with the structures that float on the surface of the ocean that they grow their oysters on.
Okay.
It's oysters is one of their main economies, as well as the development of the nori seaweed. Nori
Delicious
seaweed,
stuff.
As we all know from all our Japanese restaurants here, is what the sushi is rolled in. So that was also badly damaged. Those are their two economies that were really badly damaged.
Now, we should make sure to repeat the details plenty about the specific benefit. I'm holding up my notes so I get everything right. April 28th, 5 to 8 p.m., the Cabrillo Arts Center.
Correct.
Oysters and Pearls is the name?
We call it Oysters and Pearls, and our mayor, Helene Schneider, will be there, and it'll be emceed by John Palminteri, and there'll be wonderful food provided by local restaurants. There will be lots of origami, cranes and such everywhere, and we're
Excellent.
Doing as much as we can to make an enjoyable event. There'll also be taiko drum players from L.A. coming up, and so we're excited about them. And it's just going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be a silent auction as well. There's a lot of things being donated. I think people will really be interested in that, too. Tickets, if you just want to buy a ticket to come, it's $50, but you could also just make a donation, and we're very, very happy to receive that. You can contact Takako Wakita, and her email is wakita@cox.net. Her phone number is 805-964-7559. That's 964-7559. If you would like to make a direct donation, that would be great.
And nobody should hesitate to contact her, because as I know her, Wakita Sensei, she's my Japanese teacher at SBCC. Very nice.
Well,
very friendly.
She's iconic to Santa Barbara. I think she's our national city treasure.
Right. Who wouldn't know her? Now, you've mentioned, of course, we've talked about the relationship a bit, the sister city relationship between Santa Barbara and Toba. How far back does it go? About 45 years?
That's exactly correct. We've been sister city to Toba for 45 years.
And when did that, I mean, we can guess when that began from the number, but I guess what brought that about? What are the origins of this relationship?
Well, you know, it's so important to create a personal relationship with people that are very different, because otherwise we get very sort of warped views of who people are, and it's very easy to sort of put it all into this sort of strange little package. And I think if you learn, if you get to know people personally from other cultures, you realize that we're much more similar than different. Mm. And what our needs are and what our wants are very, very much the same. And you start having a much more open heart with each other. And then that, of course, then goes to other people of that culture that you may not know personally. And that furthers peace in this world.
Now, what's your own relationship with Japanese culture? When did your interest in this start?
Well, I've been kind of passionate about Japanese art and culture since I was about 10 years old.
Ah, okay. So yes. Roots in childhood.
My roots in childhood. My father gave me this little book of haiku with tiny little pictures in it, and I immediately became fascinated. And I'm a shiatsu therapist. I cook Japanese. I have kimonos. I study tea ceremony. I'm very much enamored of the whole Japanese art and culture. It's very close to my heart and mind.
Now, tell me, when the tsunami hit, how soon was it that the Sister City organization decided, well, we've got to do something for Toba?
Well, we, of course, immediately contacted them, and it took a little bit for them to get back to us because they're a very proud people, and they don't like to ask for help, actually. But in this situation, their mayor, Kido, reached out to us and very humbly asked if we could help, and I was very moved by that, and we all were. And so we just jumped on it and had a meeting as fast as we could and got things together and, you know, enrolled people in the process. And it's we're doing this in a month. We're creating this fundraiser, and we only had a month, so that's a very short time to do this. But everybody's really stepped up to the plate, and I think we're going to make this a wonderful event.
It takes a lot of drawing on every available resource, I would imagine, every connection.
Absolutely.
Very quickly. And it sounds like it all kind of came through. I mean, it seems like the event you describe, it's something that would take longer than you had to put together, certainly.
Yes, it normally would.
Right.
But, you know, when you have a disaster and you have a situation that needs immediate help, everybody wants to help. I mean, that's my experience. Immediately when I was watching television and that evening when the news came on, so I've seen it from the beginning, and I was immediately emailing all my Japanese friends, and my heart was just breaking, and I immediately wanted to do something. And I immediately just flew the Japan flag on my porch.
Right.
It's the best I could do at the moment, and just keep that awareness alive. And everybody, I think, wants to help. Everybody that is connected to their heart wants to help. And when we give people an opportunity of how they can, they're in some ways relieved and excited because, oh, great, we can do something. And I did also want to mention so many people are doing so many things. Even the UCSB students right here on the campus, they're having a fundraiser this week, Thursday and Friday, from 5 to 8 at the Multicultural Center. It's called 1,000 Cranes for Japan. And the little Japanese origami cranes, they're symbols of hope and peace and prayer. So the students here are going to be doing something wonderful, too. I hope the kids can all participate in that.
And that's at the UCSB Multicultural Center, and of course they have more on the web. I would Google UCSB MCC and you'll get there. By the way, if you've just tuned in, this is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9. New time now, Thursdays, 8 until 9 in the morning. Glad to have you here listening. I am speaking with a representative of, and I want to get this exactly right, the Santa Barbara Toba Sister City Organization, Lark Bateau, about the tsunami damage that has happened to Toba, which is the sister city of Santa Barbara, as I'm sure you've heard me repeat many times in this conversation, but I want to make sure you know it. Now, Japan on the whole seems to have impressed the world by the way they've handled the damages that the tsunami has caused. What reports do you have, or what have you heard from friends in Toba about the conditions there right now? I mean, what's it like in Toba after the tsunami?
Well, I think one of the reasons they didn't ask for help from us immediately is because they felt like the need was so great north of their city, and their hearts are also broken about this. They also want to help. So there's tremendous care and concern in Toba and all over Japan. Everybody wants to be able to help everybody. And, you know, it's a great tragedy, and it's even hard to talk about.
Now, even aside from what's going on with the tsunami, people will surely be interested, people with an interest in Japan or with an interest in other cultures, they'll want to know, maybe they just learned that there's a sister city organization. Mm. And if they want to learn more or if they want to get involved, what are the kind of things, the kind of opportunities open to them?
Well, there's usually several events during the year. There's musical events with there's a wonderful shakuhachi player in town named Bob Sedevi. They also have an exchange program with I think it's the 7th graders or 8th graders or something. And a few kids from here go to Toba and stay with families, and a few kids from Toba come and stay here, which again furthers this really a deep and visceral understanding of another people, and it creates wonderful joy and happiness there. They also, every several years, organize a trip to Japan. And I know they're in the works doing that too, and they hope to make a trip to Japan. I think it's this November actually, and usually they go to Tokyo, Kyoto, and Toba for sure. And when you're in Toba, let me tell you, they treat you like royalty. You stay in a 5-star hotel, and you can go to the baths and the spas every night. There are banquets and special events all over the city. It's really, really quite amazing.
Yeah, I've got to go to Toba. You're selling me on this. And I think everybody listening is really wanting to go now, too. But I also notice, and this is something people will notice if they're just around town, I mean, there's a lot of Japanese students visiting and studying in Santa Barbara.
Yes.
What is the story with that? Is there some sort of, does Santa Barbara have a presence over there? And is it saying, you know, come study in Santa Barbara. It's very nice here. What's going on with that?
Well, I don't know a lot about that, but I do know that there's many Americans living in Japan. They're just enamored, just like I am, just like so many, and they want to know the language, as you do. I know you study Japanese.
Working on it.
And love the culture and want to live there, and they do. I think sometimes people go, they teach English. You often hear about that. There's a gentleman, I think, who's been living in Toba for several years, teaching English, living there. You know, it's wonderful.
And I'm going to throw this out here. There's just seems to be a lot of exchange between here and there, and just a constant traffic back and forth between this region of the U.S. and that region of Japan. It seems to be working very well. I would never have expected that I'd hear about so many foreigners over there and see so many Japanese over here. You know, it's impressive to me. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Well, the world's become very small. You know, everybody's everywhere these days, and I think that is the best thing that can be, because like I said earlier, when you get to know people at a personal level who are of a different culture, you know, your heart opens and it makes for peace, and we need that.
Now, I want to make sure to reemphasize this benefit, April 28th, 5 to 8 p.m., the Cabrillo Arts Center, Oysters and Pearls from the Santa Barbara Toba Sister City Organization. I want to make sure, are we missing any piece of information about this? People should know, because this is public information, and it's useful information. It should be fun.
Well, let me give those phone number again. Takako,
sure.
Takako Wakita, 805-964-7559, or wakita@cox.net. That's wakita@cox.net. And if you contact her, you'll get all the information you need to participate.
I've been speaking with Lark Bateau, representative of the Santa Barbara Toba Sister City Organization. We've been talking about the tsunami damages to Toba and what we can do here to help out. Lark, thanks so much for taking the time this morning.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
This is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9 at its new time, Thursdays, 8 a.m. until 9, to coincide with the release of the issue of the Santa Barbara Independent at hand. Stay tuned. We're going to talk about so much more, including spring sports with John Zant, who I can see right now through the glass. And we're going to be talking about the Vintners Festival on the third segment. So clearly, you don't want to miss any more Poodle Radio on KCSB 91.9 FM.
UCSB's Take Back the Night will be hosting a catered benefit dinner and open mic night to raise money for the Santa Barbara Rape Crisis Center this Thursday, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Loma Pelona Center on the UCSB campus. The purpose of this event is not only to raise funds for the organization, but to also unite the community against sexual assault. To RSVP, email tbtn_ucsb@yahoo.com. If you have a musical, written, or spoken word piece you would like to present at the open mic night, please email dmayorga @umail.ucsb.edu.
Santa Barbara Botanic Garden welcomes the community to participate in their extensive strategic planning process on Thursday, April 7th from 6 p.m. until 8:30 p.m. This community meeting is hoping to provide a voice for the supports and concerns of the public, as well as create a vision for the future of the garden and its long recovery from the devastation of the Jesuita fire. Over the next several months, a group designated to work on this vision will determine the programs needed to best achieve the garden's mission. In this upcoming meeting, CEO Steve Windhager will explain the process SBBG is using to develop the plan, discuss the current status of the processes, and provide an update on the direction the garden is moving towards. The meeting will take place at the Santa Barbara Museum of Natural History's Fleischmann Auditorium at 2559 Cuesta del Sol, Santa Barbara. For additional information, please contact Joni Kelly at jkelly@sbbg.org or call 805-682-4726, extension 132.
It's KCSB's past, it's KCSB's present, it's KCSB's future. It's profiles of your favorite KCSB programs and interviews with your favorite KCSB DJs. It's the KCS Beat, the Santa Barbara Independence column on all things KCSB. My name's Colin Marshall, I host the Marketplace of Ideas and Poodle Radio on KCSB, and since I write the column, I'll be really clear on the details. It's the KCS Beat, every Tuesday on independent.com, because why confine your KCSB obsession to the airwaves alone?
We
want you to listen to
KCSB 91.9
FM in Santa Barbara.
It's KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. My name is Colin Marshall, your host on Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent, which you're listening to at its brand new time, Thursdays, 8 a.m. until 9, to coincide with the release of the issue. Of course, there's a new hot-off-the-press issue of the Santa Barbara Independent on newsstands now. So, you know, I kind of like that we're broadcasting at the same time as people are picking that up. Now, because the internet has decided to take a little bit of a vacation here in the KCSB studios, we got creative. We're playing an album from the Gove County String Quartet, Jim Connolly's band. You'll know him if you're into the Santa Barbara new music scene. I figure, you know, why not spin a little bit of this if we can't spin the tracks wrangled by pop culture editor Allie Cumming-Gore. We're into the second segment of the show now, and I have promised to talk about the cover story, which, as I said, out now on the newsstands. I haven't seen the cover, and with me is a man who has not seen the cover either, but he's written the story, John Zant, the sports guy, talking about spring sports. John, welcome back.
Thanks, Colin. Good to be here.
This is, as we said just before we came on the air, a little bit of a different tack as far as the spring sports or the seasonal sports stories are concerned. You concentrated not on stats, but on players, people, you know, young people doing interesting things in Santa Barbara sports. I mean, how'd you decide on doing that this time?
Well, you know, with the onset of spring, I thought it'd really be nice to get outdoors. That's the attraction of spring sports.
You're, right, right, right.
you're out smelling the smells and hearing the sounds. And, you know, with March Madness wrapping up, I decided to get out last week, and I went to four or five different games and events, and really enjoyed watching the efforts of the athletes. And I talked to some of them after the games, and put all profiles of those athletes into this week's cover story in The Independent.
First up is Jessa Escalante, Dos Pueblos' girl for all seasons. That means what?
Well, she plays in every sports season she can. She's a sort of a throwback kind of athlete who doesn't concentrate on one sport and just play basketball, which she is very good at. But last fall she played tennis and just junior varsity tennis. She was just learning the sport, but she wanted to play at Dos Pueblos High School and try that new sport. So she did tennis in the fall, and basketball was her bread and butter sport in the winter. And then in the spring season, she's out on the track. And I saw her in the Easter relays recently, and she ran the 100-meter dash, the sprint. And then she went over to the other side of the field and ran and threw the discus. I thought that was a really interesting combination. And she's a really interesting young woman who, when she was 14 years old, she was national champion of NFL punt, pass, and kick.
Really?
I happened to see her on television during the Colts-Chargers playoff game in January of 2008. So you had your eye on her. You knew she'd be an outstanding athlete, and she's proving that now at Dos Pueblos High School, where she's a junior now.
I take it it's not very common for you to see a high school player playing all these sports all the time, essentially.
Yeah, specialization has become more and more the way kids go, and you rarely see those three-sport athletes anymore, and it's refreshing to see them out there because, that was probably how it was back in the day for high school kids.
It's a little bit of a travel back in time for high school sports for you?
Yes. I played high school sports. I think everybody did. It remains a great memory in their growth and their youth. To think back those days when you were in really good shape and and bonding with teammates and just
right.
having a good time with your friends.
Now, there's another player you talk about, an SBCC softball pitcher by the name of Kaylee Snyder, I believe, whose pitch ended up injuring somebody, breaking another player's jaw. Is that?
Yeah, she just happened to tell me that she threw a. It wasn't her pitch that hit the person's jaw directly. She threw a hard inside pitch, and she does throw very hard and gets loads of strikeouts. And apparently, the ball came up off the bat of the hitter and right up into her jaw and broke her jaw. And apparently, she wasn't wearing a face mask, which a lot of the softball players do now. And I'm sure that young woman's all her teammates have probably strapped on their face masks.
Yeah, around
after
her. But she, I mean, she's a good pitcher. That's not all about breaking jaws. This is a good player we're looking at, right?
Oh, yeah, she's phenomenal. I think she's won about 19 games of their 21. City College's softball team is off to a great start. And they have a big tournament at Pershing Park, not this weekend, but the following weekend.
Now, it sounds like from what you've written about sports, I mean, all the sports you've written about and what I've talked to you about on the show, people who have been focusing on maybe UCSB sports and high school sports, they're missing out if they're not paying some attention to SBCC, right?
Yeah, they have a great program, lots of students, and, that campus is... As a junior college or a community college, as they call it, is probably the most picturesque spot in the world. I know out here at UCSB, we like the campus by the sea here too.
But, right.
Of course, City College has the track there that high schools use as well as the City College track team. It's right there on the beach, La Playa Stadium, and the softball and baseball teams play around the corner at Pershing Park off of Castillo Street.
I mean, yeah, I went to UCSB as an undergrad, and I take, as I mentioned in the last segment, some Japanese classes at SBCC now. And that campus, it gives this one a run for its money, I got to say.
Yeah, probably more views of the ocean because it's up a little higher. And It's a beautiful place. In fact, you can just sit at La Playa Stadium and watch teams practice, and it still is a nice experience.
Indeed, indeed. But to give UCSB its due, I mean, you write about tennis and the Gauchos baseball. What's going on at UCSB this spring that you're really going to be interested in seeing? How, I mean, who are you watching?
Well, Gaucho baseball is a big-time sport. They're in the Big West Conference, which has produced national champions in baseball. It's Cal State Fullerton, UC Irvine. And the Gauchos they think they're in the hunt this year, but it's a very competitive conference. They have a three-game series to open conference play this weekend against Cal Poly, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I'm sure they're hoping to get off to a good start. My segment in the Independent this week talks about last Sunday's game. The Gauchos had lost a heartbreaker to San Jose State, and it's sort of a suspense till can they come back and salvage a game in that series and get a win before they enter conference play. And Nick Capito went out on the mound, an emergency starter, because the intended starter was injured. And so I write about how that game comes out last Sunday. You can read about it in the Independent.
And of course, yes, that's the cover story of this week's issue of the Santa Barbara Independent. And by the way, this is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Independent on KCSB 91.9 FM. My name's Colin Marshall, your host here every Thursday now. Now the same day as the issue, 8 until 9 in the morning. I'm speaking with John Zant. He, of course, writes about sports for the Indy. He's got the spring sports cover story. And you also write about UCSB tennis in this story. Who are you watching in UCSB tennis?
Well, I was watching Jordan Dockendorf. She's a local woman. She went to Dos Pueblos High School, went to UCLA for a year, but decided she liked it up here better and transferred up here. And she's playing doubles with her partner from Spain. They're the number one doubles team on the Gauchos, and Jordan's also a singles player. And I think they've won four of their five conference games. They're on the hunt for their conference title, too. It was a very pleasant afternoon. It was one of the warm days last week, and the courts are right out near Robertson Gym, and little bleachers under the trees, so I was in the shade. And
yes.
Watching the teams hit the ball around. They were playing Portland last week, and I believe they have a big match coming up against Irvine in a couple weeks. And so tennis was that last Thursday afternoon's experience for me in watching a spring sport.
And now, as far as high schools go, you have writing about Santa Barbara High's baseball, and you have writing about Bishop Diego High. And the Cardinals, of course, baseball as well. What's the most interesting stuff in high school baseball with those two teams right now?
Well, Santa Barbara's ranked number one in their division, and they got off to a 3-0 start in their league, and they had two outstanding players I was keeping an eye on. Colin Duell, who's already got a scholarship offer from the University of Arizona, which is a big-time baseball program, and he was playing center field, and his first at-bat, you could just see how much passion he has for the sport. He hit a slow roller to toward third base, and he just ran like heck down to the first, to beat out an infield single. You often see major leaguers lollygag it sometimes, and so this kid's really going after it. He hit a really long foul that he thought might have been fair, but the foul pole at the high school field isn't high enough to tell for sure, and they call it foul.
Wow.
But he's hit a few home runs, and he's one of these five-tool players, hit, run, throw, hit with power, and he's fun to watch. And Danny Zandona was on the mound. He's another outstanding player for Santa Barbara High Dons. He pitched the victory in that particular game. I would have liked to have checked out Dos Pueblos also, but they were in Arizona playing a tournament, and they won five games in Arizona, and they'll be playing Santa Barbara at the end of the month, and that'll be a don't-miss-it series for local baseball fans. Want to see a couple great high school teams out there.
How often do the high school teams face off against one another here in Santa Barbara, for those who haven't spent much time at Santa Barbara baseball games?
Well, in league, Santa Barbara, San Marcos, and Dos Pueblos are all in the Channel League, and their league schedule has them playing each other three times.
Three times.
There was a Santa Barbara-Dos Pueblos game that was rained out a couple of weeks ago, so they'll have to make that up. So they still have three games still to play, and it might be all in the same week, which will be quite something, like a major league series.
Now, when you're out, when you're finding players to write about, you know, when you're watching the games, when you're seeing who's who, when you just want to get outside and find some stuff to write about, I mean, you're looking for players who are playing really well, who's just really strong in whatever sport they're playing. But what else are you looking for? I mean, how do you know who you want to talk to? Because you want to talk to the best, but you also want to know, you also want to have something else there, right?
Yeah, well, I look for the enthusiasm, the passion, the spirit. Like Jessica Escalante, who we first talked about, she finished sixth, I think, in the 100 in the Easter Relays. Of course, there's, you know, great runners from all over Southern California were in that particular meet. But in the discus, she finished eighth. She just wants to get points for her team by trying something. And so she wasn't a world beater out there, but she was, trying to get the most out of herself. You know, I have a particular affection for track and field because it is a sport where athletes get out of it what they put into it, and there's no excuses, no blaming teammates or whatever.
Yes.
You know, you got to put in the work and then try as hard as you can to run that 400 meters all the way around the track, and, you know, while your muscles are aching and, you know, putting yourself out there. And I think it's a great sport maybe to do in the spring while you're also going to play football or basketball or whatever, you know, during the other parts of the year, because it really gets you in good shape.
Do you often see that combined? You know, when someone will do track and field, they'll also often be doing another sport, or is that simply a good idea?
Well, it used to be a part of that all-around high school scene that I talked about, and the local schools have great participation. San Marcos High has over 100 kids out for track, and I think it's getting more encouraged now, you know, rather than have someone go to seed during the spring. If you get out on the track, there's an event for everybody, you know, throwing, jumping, running, and I certainly would encourage it if I were if my kids were still in school, which they aren't, but they all did run track.
It's almost like an evolutionary process. Like if someone isn't doing track and field in the spring, they stand less of a chance of making the cut next time around in whatever sport they do play, right? I mean, you got to stay in it somehow.
Well, they may have their spring programs in volleyball. Well, volleyball is also going on, I think the Santa Barbara team was off in Hawaii, so I didn't watch any high school volleyball last week. But that is another spring sport out there, as well as women's water polo out here at UCSB. So I couldn't catch them all. It was just what was available for me to see last week.
Right. And I'm glad you mentioned volleyball, because I want to make sure to ask this question, which was relayed to me by our executive editor, fearless leader Nick Welsh. I ran into him at the French Press not long ago, and he says, you're having John on, you got to ask him this, because he knows about volleyball, and I've always wondered, what's the deal with the pants that the girls wear in volleyball, and why don't the male players wear pants that short? I guess that's what he asked.
Well, maybe I'll have to ask a volleyball player that.
There's a question.
I know, the men's pants probably reflect, the way basketball goes. Remember Stockton, the Jazz always, had the tight little pants, and the old NBA players, had tight mm-hmm. pants, but then the loose ones became fashionable, and the women's I don't think anybody's objected to seeing the women's style of wear in volleyball, but I'll have to ask players that.
Right. That comes from the top, that question. That's from Nick Welsh. I have my hands are off that question, but I had to ask it. In any case, it is the spring sports story, the cover story by the way, written by John Zant in the current issue out today of the Santa Barbara Independent. John, always a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, thank you, Colin. Look forward to the next time.
Indeed. This is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on its new time, Thursdays 8 until 9 on KCSB 91.9. We're going to take a very, very, very short break, so stay with us. We're coming back talking about the Vintners Festival. That's going to be going on soon. So, you know, it's Santa Barbara. You got to get the wine information out there, and we will be getting the wine information out there on Poodle Radio, KCSB 91.9 FM.
Santa Barbara Botanic Garden welcomes the community to participate in their extensive strategic planning process on Thursday, April 7th from 6 p.m. until 8:30 p.m. This community meeting is hoping to provide a voice for the supports and concerns of the public, as well as create a vision for the future of the garden and its long recovery from the devastation of the Jesuita fire. Over the next several months, a group designated to work on this vision will determine the programs needed to best achieve the garden's mission. In this upcoming meeting, CEO Steve Windhager will explain the process SBBG is using to develop the plan, discuss the current status of the processes, and provide an update on the direction the garden is moving towards. The meeting will take place at the Santa Barbara Museum of Natural History's Fleischmann Auditorium at 2559 Cuesta del Sol, Santa Barbara. For additional information, please contact Joni Kelly at jkelly@sbbg.org or call 805-682-4726, extension 132.
Become the media and not just consume it. Associated students organizations such as KCSB, The Bottom Line, KCSB Media Center, and communications personnel all offer you a place to go for hands-on media training at UCSB. You can train to be a DJ, news reporter, or sportscaster, as well as develop other media skills. As UC students, we are fortunate enough to have these organizations available as resources for getting involved. So, don't hate the media, create the media. Care to know, associated students.
On Thursday, April 14th, experience Grampus Buffet and the Transhumans at the Santa Barbara New Music Series. Grampus Buffet, an improvising, interface-driven LA trio. Signal processing, trumpet, trombone, percussion, acoustic sound, visuals, processing. The Transhumans, disharmony, disrhythm, mayhem, the full impact of moving air. That's Grampus Buffet and the Transhumans, featuring yours truly, DJ Colin Marshall, spinning the usual fine selection of tracks before, between, and after the sets on Thursday, April 14th at 8 p.m. at Muddy Waters, 508 East Haley Street in downtown Santa Barbara. Learn more about the Santa Barbara New Music Series at culturefrazier.com. That is CulturefraziER.com.
UCSB's Take Back the Night will be hosting a catered benefit dinner and open mic night to raise money for the Santa Barbara Rape Crisis Center this Thursday, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Loma Pelona Center on the UCSB campus. The purpose of this event is not only to raise funds for the organization, but to also unite the community against sexual assault. To RSVP, email tbtn_ucsb@yahoo.com. If you have a musical, written, or spoken word piece you would like to present at the open mic night, please email dmayorga@umail.ucsb.edu.
It's KCSB's past, it's KCSB's present, it's KCSB's future. It's profiles of your favorite KCSB programs and interviews with your favorite KCSB DJs. It's the KCS Beat, the Santa Barbara Independence column on all things KCSB. My name's Colin Marshall, I host the Marketplace of Ideas and Poodle Radio on KCSB, and since I write the column, I'll be really clear on the details. It's the KCS Beat, every Tuesday on independent.com, because why confine your KCSB obsession to the airwaves alone?
Want you to listen to
KCSB 91.9
FM Santa Barbara.
They say that falling in love is wonderful.
The New York Times proclaims Kurt Elling is the standout male vocalist of our time. The Washington Post says, no singer in jazz has been as daring, dynamic, or interesting as Kurt Elling. Elling, with his astonishing technical prowess, adroit creativity, and emotional depth, will appear on stage at the Libero Theater on Tuesday, April 19th at 8 p.m. Elling is an uncommonly powerful performer. His vocal command of rhythm, texture, phrasing, and dynamics evokes a virtuoso jazz instrumentalist. Every one of Elling's 9 albums has been nominated for a Grammy. He is a renowned artist of vocal leaves, the art of putting lyrics to improvised instrumental solos, and, as such, is heir to its progenitors, Eddie Jefferson, King Pleasure, and John Henry's. The late poet Robert Creeley wrote, Kurt Elling takes us into a world of sacred particulars. His words are informed by a powerful poetic spirit. Kurt Elling is truly a complete artist, at the top of his game and the best jazz has to offer. Don't miss this opportunity to see him at the Libero on Tuesday, April 19th at 8 p.m. Tickets for Kurt Elling are available at the Libero box office at 33 East Canon Cavito, by phone at 805-963-0761, or at libero.com, where you can print them out at the KCSB is a media supporter of Libero Jazz. As the second episode in the three-part series A Woman's Voice, the Libero Theater will present Madeline Peyrou in concert on Monday, April 11th at 8 p.m. Peyrou is best known to her fans for intimately arranged covers of the early American blues and jazz repertoire. Owning her skills on the streets of Europe and basing her style on three of the pillars of jazz, Bessie Smith, Louis Armstrong, and Billie Holiday. Peyrou is an avid songwriter and lyrical innovator, and will preview her upcoming album, Standing on the Rooftop, as well as performing selections from her better-known material. She is accompanied on this tour by feisty blues punk maven and sponsored Gibson guitarist Sonny Ward. The Hartford Courant says Madeline Peyrou has made her strongest impression to date with subtly eclectic transformations of jazz standards, weaving an alluring tapestry of sonic elegance, vocal character, and lyrical bite. Don't miss the opportunity to see her at the Libero on Monday, April 11th at 8 p.m. Tickets for Madeline Peyrou are available at the Libero box office at 33 East Canon Perdido, by phone at 805-963-0761, or at libero.com, where you can print them out at home. KCSB is a media supporter of the Libero's A Woman's Voice series.
Transitions Mental Health Association, TMHA, in partnership with the Healing Arts Council of Santa Barbara County, HACSB, is inviting people of all ages with a connection to mental illness to submit entries of artistic expression for the 2011 Art of Recovery show. Persons recovering from substance abuse, mental illness, and their family members are invited to submit work in any art form. Art of Recovery will be held in Santa Maria and Lompoc during the month of May in support of Mental Health Awareness Month. The show will be open and free to the public. Art of Recovery will be held in Santa Maria and Lompoc during the month of May in support of Mental Health Awareness Month. The show will be open and free to the public. The event was first developed in 1995 to offer people in mental health recovery a way to express themselves and to provide a venue to share art, feelings, and messages with the general public. A featured piece will be chosen for use in Art of Recovery and TMHA/HACSB promotional materials. The artist whose work is selected as the featured piece will be encouraged to provide interviews to local news media and will be contacted as part of the promotional outreach for the show.
Submissions may be in any artistic medium, including jewelry, poems, music, stone, metal, clay, textiles, sketches, and paintings. Please contact the art coordinator, Crystal Gonzalez, at 805-928-0139 or by email at cgonsalves@t-mha.org for an entry form or more information. To learn more about the Transitions Mental Health Association, visit www.t-mha.org.
You're listening to KCSB 91.9 FM, Santa Barbara's Community Radio.
KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. My name is Colin Marshall, your host on Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent, at its brand new time, Thursdays, 8 in the morning until 9, to coincide, of course, with the release of the current issue of the Independent. Works very neatly, that. Now for the third segment, I have promised to talk of the Vintners Festival, and I will give you talk of the Vintners Festival. Two guests very relevant to the subject in Studio A right now here at the KCSB studios below Stork Tower on the lovely UCSB campus. First of all, I will introduce to you the Executive Director of the Santa Barbara County Vintners Association, Jim Feilick. Jim, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Colin.
And we have someone here who's been here before, but, you know, for variety's sake, Jim, I'll let you introduce him and his accomplishments as a winemaker.
Well, this is Matt Brady, who is the assistant winemaker at Jaffers Wine Cellars in Santa Barbara, part of what we call our urban wine trail, fruit from throughout Santa Barbara County, yet the winery is right here in the city of Santa Barbara. Matt, good morning,
buddy. Thanks, Jim. Good to be here.
And welcome back, Matt, by the way. Good to have you here. You were an early Poodle Radio guest, and we're making the full circle. What can I say?
He's now a standard poodle.
It's true. He's a very much...
veteran poodle.
Hi-oh! Anyway, yes, the puns aside, we should describe. I mean, people will know what the Vintners Festival is, or will they? What is it?
You know, people used to know, Colin, what the Vintners Festival is, but this is the 29th annual Santa Barbara County Vintners Festival, and it is the Vintners Festival, S apostrophe possessive, for all of you who remember your possessive apostrophe punctuation.
Yes, yes.
It's ours. It is owned by every single member of the Santa Barbara County Vintners Association, and every single member of the association will be there pouring. And it represents all of the diversity of Santa Barbara County. And for those who have been in Santa Barbara a long time, I don't need to remind you, but I'm going to anyway, when you look at the ocean, you're not looking to the west. You're looking usually due south.
Right.
And that's because our mountain ranges are transverse. They run east and west rather than the normal north and south on the Pacific coast. And that gives us a unique situation. Is it better? Is it worse? It's not a question of better or worse. It is a question of different. And there is such diversity in that because of this huge mouth that opens to the Pacific Ocean, this cool air off the 32,000-foot deep Mount Monterey Basin rolls its way in the San Ynez and Santa Maria Valleys, and it gives us so many different places to grow up to 60 different varieties and in so many different spots. Every winemaker has his or her own view of how to produce those varieties. And you're not going to be able to do it at our Vintners Festival to taste them all, but you can draw a map out. And I'll let Matt Matt Mapp. Hi, Mapp. I'll let Matt talk a little bit about, for example, his winery focuses on Rhone varieties, and he can give you an example of different Syrahs, for example, with different approaches to four or five different vineyards of Syrahs. You think, well, Syrah, but they're totally different wines.
Yeah, and Santa Barbara is such a special, unique place because of this geologic diversity. And our winery, Jaffers, actually makes 7 different Syrahs from 5 different vineyards throughout the county, cool climate vineyards in Santa Maria, Santa Rita Hills, warmer vineyards out in the Ballard Canyon area of San Ynez. And we wouldn't be able to have, you know, so many Syrahs unless they were all distinctly different. And it's one of the unique qualities about Santa Barbara that makes it such a special place. And one of the reasons why it's so fun to come to a festival like the Vintners Festival, where you have all the different wineries pouring some of their best wines. Folks have the opportunity to talk to winemakers and pick their brains. And as a winemaker, that's something that I look forward to, because it's always great connecting with your customers and you know, being out there enjoying all the wine, the food, the music, and talking to people.
And one of the things here, our festival is held at the base of the Santa Rita Hills, at the edge of Lompoc. It's in River Park, which is literally, you can't figure out why they named it River Park. It's right on the edge of the Santa Ynez River, right off of Highway 246 at Sweeney Road. It's easy to get to from either Highway 1 or Highway 246. 101 meets both of those. I mean, it's very easy to get to. If people go to our website, sbcountywines.com, there's all the information there. Our phone number for those, if you're driving, please don't write this down, but if you're not, 688-0881 will give you all the information. But getting back to the festival, there are people like Matt, all of the people there that want to talk about their wines. Again, The Vintners Association is rather unique in the state of California. When we poll the other associations, it is a requirement to be a member of the Vintners Association that 75% of your production be grown in Santa Barbara County. So it isn't a question of just your winery being in Santa Barbara County. The majority, 75% of your wine must be grown in the county. So this really is the festival of the wines, of the fruit from Santa Barbara County. So it's a very unique festival. And when we started in 1983, in fact, the late Ralph Ofterheide and Chris Whitcraft and I put on a festival in 1978. We did one in 78, 79, and 90, before there was an association, when there were 11 wineries. There were festivals, but in 1983, when we formed our association and had our first festival, there were only 17 wineries. There were no other festivals around. Now there seems to be a festival every week,
right?
But there is only one where you'll find every member. And I'd like to throw this in as well. Of our membership, 90% of those members produce less than 10,000 cases, and 75% produce less than 5,000 cases. So we're not even talking mom and pop. We're talking mom or pop wineries.
No, you just get one parent.
Where one of the parents is out either raising the kids or doing another job to support the winery.
Right, exactly.
And it's that kind of festival. It is a family festival, and we've been going for almost 30 years on that basis. It is the festival of Santa Barbara County. I haven't let you say anything, Colin. Do you have any questions?
Well, it's good that you've said this much, because you know we have a short segment, but we're going to be talking more about it on the following Poodle as well next week. But you know, since we have Matt here this time, I want to ask. You've mentioned the brain pickings. You know that the buying audience. You know the wine enthusiasts do when they approach you. What's your favorite stuff they ask you? What do people throw at you? You know that you don't quite expect.
You know, it's funny because oftentimes when you get questions as a winemaker, people almost feel like they're stepping outside their bounds to get you to talk about it. And it's kind of a guilty pleasure when people ask questions, because it gives me an excuse to ramble on and on about what I'm truly passionate about. So when they, you know, pick our brains about production details, or you know, how much of this wine was foot stomped and whole cluster fermented, and what'd you do here? It's that kind of stuff that's really interesting, and it's you know, it's a good opportunity for us to make that connection with folks. Something I did want to mention: Jim said how there are festivals. It seems like every single weekend, as a winemaker, we attend many of these. And, you know, really the barometer of any festival's success is how good the food is, personally. And we haven't said much about the restaurants, but there are, you know, superb, terrific restaurants, great food offerings at this event, at the Vintners Festival. And it's something that I look forward to every year.
Now, just we're pushing this up toward the very end, but where can people find out more about Jaffers before the festival if they want to go on the net or what have you?
Jafferswine.com is our website. And as Jim said, we're located right in downtown Santa Barbara. We're part of the Urban Wine Trail. There are about 10 different wineries here in downtown Santa Barbara. So you don't always have to head up over the hill to taste wine. You just have to do that on Saturday, April 16th for the Vintners Festival.
And Jim, I know we'll be hearing more from you next week, but hopefully for longer. What can you tease about the next appearance?
Well, we will be bringing a winemaker who is well known in Santa Barbara and makes his own wine and makes wines for a number of other vineyards. He is in another wine event right at the
right
moment, in Vail, and said that he would do this via phone, I'm hoping to have him here in person. He's been traveling a lot, as a number of our winemakers are doing right now. I mean, this is a time to be out marketing and selling the product right now. But the website, once again, if I can throw that in there,
sure,
is SB, like Santa Barbara, sbcountywines.com.
Excellent. And Jim, Matt, thanks so much for taking the time this morning.
Thank you,
Colin.
And that's the bell. It is the end of Poodle Radio on its new time, Thursdays, 8 o'clock until 9. Join us next time to coincide with the release of The Independent every week. Of course, we are now on Thursdays. Thanks for joining me. You can re-listen to the show at independent.com. I've been Colin Marshall, and oh, I'm just talking too fast this morning. Stay tuned for more on KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara.